Y'all. Hi, everybody. I'm Paul. I'm an alcoholic. Oh, 45 minus 5 is 40. Not that I'm pissed, but I just have to like make some arrangements, rearrangements in my head. I'm going to give you my 40-minute talk. I love you, Juan. What a beautiful message of recovery this evening. I did a poll. There was a little poll during the break, and we all decided that you're actually going to do the main talk. No. We're like, wait, I didn't mean that. I didn't mean that at all. It's a dirty, dirty, bad joke. I'm just going to get it out of the way because it's going to come, and I apologize in advance, but fuck, like, I love AA. I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love it with every fiber in my being. It is the absolute best thing that's ever happened to me. You thought, or God, I never thought in my wildest imagination that, A, I'd be here on a Saturday night at close to pushing 9 o'clock, clean, sober, and happy about it, let alone singing the music of Alcoholics Anonymous from a podium with a mic, with a water bottle and a thing of hand sanitizer. I used to drink this shit, for God's sakes. Like, this is... We've come full circle, haven't we? Wildest dreams. Absolute wildest dreams. And so if you're new to AA, which nobody identified as new, if you're hiding in the back, you're hiding in the front, you're hiding underneath the seats here, I've done it. I get it. I welcome you wholeheartedly. Congratulations to all the chip takers. What a gigantic deal it is. It just fills my heart and just rejuvenates me to see people getting milestones, celebrating recovery. There was not much celebrating before coming here, right? Like, pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization is the name of the game. I knew it. That was the foundation for life. And things are very, very different for me today. And so thank you for having me. It's actually part 4, but like, whatever, Anthony. This is not my second time here, but thank you for having me. I was never going to drink. Like, I was never, ever going to drink. I hated alcohol. I hated alcohol on such a bone marrow level. I hated what it looked like. I hated growing up that it was always around, or it was oftentimes around. And what would happen when, you know, the people in my house consumed alcohol, literally 100% of the time, bad shit happened. And I don't like, as a young kid, when bad shit happens. There was a lot of chaos, a lot of instability in my household growing up. But on the flip side, there was a lot of love, and there was a lot of, I was going to say consistency, but like, does that just contradict me? Yes, there actually was a lot of consistency. There was a lot of showing up. There was a lot of, we coached sports teams, and we do things together. But Friday, Saturday, Sunday, those magical days, that is when all bets are off. Right? We'd have people over at the house. I remember from a young kid, like barely even this tall, being this young kid, having people over, going to people's houses, and when alcohol entered the household and people would start crossing that invisible line, I just remember how uncomfortable and kind of scary things got. There was a lot of chaos in my household those few days, and at the focal point was my mom. I grew up in an alcoholic home. She absolutely, I know today, was doing the best she could with what she had at the time. And, you know, thankfully I'm no longer a child stuck in a household where I don't have a vote in whether I stay or go or shut down, or like I've got the freedom of choice to now be an adult and make decisions around whether do I stay for 15 more minutes or am I like good to go now? But as a kid, what I learned very early on was that when chaos ensues, which oftentimes did, that we don't talk about what happened last night. You know, dad's sweeping up the wreckage from last night, and mom's in the kitchen cleaning, you know, making us breakfast and planning the day around what do you want to do and what can I buy you, you know? And I'm 2, 3, 4, 5 years old in the kitchen, just like waiting, anticipating the sorry, the explanation, I am so sorry that we put you in that position last night. And weekend after weekend, year after year, that is what happened. And so at 3 years old, I had this little toolkit, and what I'm shoving in there from a young age is that we don't talk about what actually goes on in the household. We got the look good. We got the look good going on, and that's what matters. I learned very, very early on to wear masks, and you know, and I never got a sorry I never even heard the word sorry. But I just learned that escapism and trying to keep shit together was kind of the name of the game. And so this toolkit that I had, that, you know, going into elementary school and going into middle school, you know, when life started happening, which quite frankly, it did almost immediately, I had no way of dealing with life on life's terms. When I was in middle school, I remember it was like one day, it was so drastic. It was like, Paula, you know, athlete, you know, good student, lots of friends, you know, seemingly has got her shit together, like as much as you could at 13 years old. And walked into my first day of eighth grade. My best friend at the time was like, Paula, I just heard about something called CAP, K-A-P, Kids Against Paula. You know, and I'm the athlete, I'm the student, I'm the friend to everybody. You know, I am, you know, seemingly comfortable in my skin. I fit in, and the world is my oyster, right? And I walked in that first day of eighth grade, and everything that I knew to be comfortable and stable was now gone. And it was as if with one decision, I didn't know that somebody had made a decision to essentially destroy my life. I don't think that she knew that at the time, but my life changed like that. And I was afraid with everything in me to go to school. There were people, you know, yelling at me from down the hall. It was like, just, it took off like wildfire. And I was afraid to go to school. I was afraid that you were going to throw something at me. I was afraid you were going to pass me a note that said, I fucking hate you, you ugly slut. You know, I'm 12, 13 years old. And I start internalizing these things as if, yeah, this is me. So I'm afraid of everything and everyone. I don't know who's going to turn on me at any given time. I can't even be comfortable in the one place where I thrive and I'm free, and that's in the middle of a basketball game, right? So I'm just in constant fear of everything and everyone. And if I could have had a drink at that time, fuck, I would have absolutely, but I hated everything about alcohol. So by the time I got into high school, I was the starting point guard of the varsity basketball team. I had everything going for me that, you know, a 14-year-old could. And I wanted to fit in more than anything. So I started going to parties like freshmen in high school do, right? And for about the first couple months, I didn't drink. I don't drink. I don't like alcohol. I really, quite frankly, don't love being around people who are drinking and using drugs. But again, being around the people, being in the crowd, fitting in mattered more to me than anything. And so I remember after a football game, I remember it like it was yesterday. I went over to my friend Carrie's house. There were about 8 or 10 of us after the football game. You know, we've got bottles of this, that, and the other. And we're just there having a good time. I remember being in this kind of somewhat circle, you know, with my friends. And we're sitting there, and the bottle of pop-off goes around. And I'm like, no thanks. You know, I don't do that. And then it came around again. And I'm like, well, I'm good. And then that third time around, right, I just took it. I took it. And it hit me like nothing I'd ever experienced before. And that 14-year-old girl who was afraid of everything and everyone, worried about what you thought about me, crawling out of my skin, hating myself, was free. And Popoff absolutely did for me that night what I could not do for myself. You know, I didn't give a shit about what happened the night before, what happened 5 minutes before, what happened when I was a child, what happened the day I entered eighth grade. I was free. I was absolutely free. And that night would foreshadow what would, you know, come about the next 6 years of my drinking. I was absolutely hooked out the gate. I kissed him. I kissed her. I was, you know, fucking the life of the party. Everything was glorious. Everything was fun. Nothing mattered. I blacked out. I passed out. I'm sure I pissed my pants. I mean, just all the things happened. And it was pure magic. And I stayed there that night, and I just walked into my parents' house the next morning at 6:30 in the morning as if nothing had transpired the night before. They had literally sent out search parties for me the night before because I am a loving, caring, dependable child, right? I am an athlete. I am a student. I am the person that shows up, and I care. And that night, that Friday night, everything changed. That person that I was went right out the window, and alcohol became the focal point of my life. And when I walked into their house that morning, that Saturday morning, I saw them at the top of the stairs and I could just tell, like, they were this combination of frustrated and scared and really, really worried. And they looked at me and they said, "Oh my God, like, what happened? Are you okay?" And alcoholism kicked in and it said to the best of its ability what it does. And it was, "Fuck you, leave me alone, I'm fine. I don't care anymore. I don't care." That daughter that I prided myself to be, caring, loving, show up, right? Be present. All that stuff went right out the window. Alcohol became the most important thing in my life. You know, and out the gate, I was hooked. I was absolutely hooked. I didn't know I was hooked. I knew I loved it. I knew I needed it. I knew it was the thing that was going to get me from A to B to M to Z, from this time I woke up until the time I was all consumed. You know, and I was 14, 15 years old, so drinking around the clock. I mean, if it was an option, I would have been, but it was. I wasn't that, like, crafty at that age. But I'd be in the middle of a basketball game. I'd be at school. I'd be surrounded by people, and I would be obsessing about who was going to get it from me, where we were going to do it, and what was it going to look like. I'm thinking about the ways in which the weekend was going to be, what it's going to feel like. Holy moly, everything was wrapped around the next drink. The next drink. The unfortunate thing about my drinking is that I overshoot the mark 9.999 times out of 10. And, you know, that cliche kind of thing that we talk about in Alcoholics Anonymous, is it was fun with problems and then just problems. I just, like, shot right over fun, and I went straight into fun with problems. Straight there. And I didn't care, because alcoholism keeps me from caring. I love that. I love not caring. I love being the tornado. Like, that's freedom for me, right? You don't like it? Move on, right? But I'm that gal. I'm that girl in high school. I'm that girl that, like, oh, God, I know that people are dreading me walking through the door. I get the look because I drink differently. I drink differently than every other person in the room. And I'm trying to make it look normal. I'm trying to make it feel normal. I'm, like, keeping tallies on my hands. I'm, like, trying to, like, see what this person next to me is doing. How do I, like, look the part? And, but what happens is when I have a drink, I have another, and then I have another, and then I have another, and then I don't give a shit about the intentions that I had before I got there. I don't care about it being normal. I'm free, this is fun, and all bets are off. I lose the power of choice once I take that first drink. I didn't know that that's what was happening, but that's what happened literally every time. I had no idea where I was going to end up, what I was going to be doing, who I was going to do it with. Am I going to start the night with you and then maybe end the night with you? Stay tuned. Like, I have no idea. I literally have no idea. Am I going to wake up in Los Osos or will I be in LA? I don't know. But let's go find out, right? So I'm that girl in high school. And I can tell you that what made that go away, that feeling, that pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization go away at 7 a.m. when I'm coming to, or 7 p.m. when I'm getting to the party and people don't want me there, is alcohol. Is alcohol. That is the solution to any and all problems that were inside and outside of my life. So to put it bluntly, I needed to get the fuck away from Los Osos, where I grew up, by the time I graduated high school. I graduated high school by the skin of my teeth, and I needed to go away. I didn't need to go too far, but I needed to go far enough away that, like, I don't know, like, let's go 5 hours north. I just, like, probably picked it on a map. I got into some schools. I ended up going to Sonoma State, right? So the way that I kick off going to college is, my parents get a couple friends and I front row center tickets to the Mid-State Fair up in Paso to my favorite band at the time, Maroon 5. Maroon 5. I love Adam Levine. It's an alcoholic's dream, right? They got us a hotel room. We're, like, sneaking in bottles. And we're going to go have a good time. A good time for me is a really cute intention. The reality is that I woke up in county jail, I don't know, 6 hours later, because it doesn't matter what I had intended. It doesn't matter what I intended. I drink, then I drink more, then I drink more, and all bets are off, you know? I remember that next day, seeing the police report and looking at it with my parents with so much shame. And I have the parents that will love me to death. You know, they're looking over and they're like, "Well, it looks like you had something in your system." My dad's, like, Googling it, because I think there must have been Google at the time. He's like, "That looks like paint thinner. Somebody must have, like, given you paint thinner." And I was like, "Yes. See, once I get something like that in my head, I don't have to take accountability or responsibility for the fact that I ended up in jail last night. See, it was the wrong place, wrong time. See, I accidentally drank paint dinner last night. Yeah, if only I would have eaten a little bit more, right? I've got every excuse under the sun why drinking ended up in the catastrophizing way that it did, but it never had to do with the drinking itself. What an order, right? So my rationale too is like, everybody gets drunk in Publix at the Paso Fair. I think if we like took another poll, we're all about polls tonight, probably about, I don't know, 2/3 of the room here has gotten drunk in public at the Paso Fair. So that's just like, it's like ticket into fucking AA right there. So I ended up going up to college, and I was there for about 2 weeks. 2 weeks. And within that two-week period, that first night, I broke my finger here, and it was completely flat against my hand, and I had surgery a couple days later. I got my first DUI, my second drunk in public. I was kicked out of the dorms. I was in a six-person, you know, dorm room situation, and I was kicked out of that situation and put into my own individual situation with my own RA, and then I woke up in the Santa Rosa Hospital, you know. By the time I got to Sonoma State, before I even started classes, all this had transpired, you know? And I'm already in the grips of alcoholism. The Big Book describes me in all the ways so beautifully. But at that time, I'm 18, 19 years old, and I'm not even living in reality anymore. I can't differentiate good from bad, right from wrong. I have a plan. It's always a good plan, and it's always going to be executed, right? So when I wake up that morning in the Santa Rosa Hospital, connected to whatever you're connected to, right? Like, what a beautiful moment of clarity that could have been, right? Like, oh, this would be a really good AA story. Young gal wakes up in the hospital from alcohol poisoning. She's like emaciated, bloated face, dying of alcoholism. And what a beautiful moment of clarity that would be. And that is not at all what my story is. That's not at all what happened for me. What happened for me is I thought, I got to get out of here. And that's what I did. I left the hospital without probably anybody knowing in my gown and booties. I hitchhiked back to school. This guy in a red truck picked me up and dropped me off at school. And I walked into my dorm room, and there was that bottle of vodka as if nothing had transpired the night before. Right? And I got kicked out. So I'm something called a liability. Some of you might understand that. I am a liability. I remember getting the letter from the dean of the Sonoma State, and it read, Cliff Notes version, Dear Ms. Boucher, don't ever come back here again. Love, the dean of Sonoma State. And, you know, in true alcoholic fashion, I break into my parents' house, because they have locked me out of their house, broken through a window, blood, glass everywhere, break into their house, steal the keys of the car that I have just lost the privilege of driving, take the car, and drive back up to Sonoma State to be with my friends, you know? And these people didn't know me, they didn't like me, they loved me because I had a debit card and I black out. So, like, I'm just free money all the time. I've got a car, I'm a rare breed up there, so they love that. I go back up to hang out with my friends. I'm there for about 15 minutes. I'm on campus in the parking lot, beer in hand, bam, get arrested for drunk in public and trespassing. And I knew that bitch, Officer Maggie, was out to get me, right? Like, I knew it, you know, because I'm a victim. I'm not just an alcoholic. I'm a victim. Again, wrong place, wrong time, right? If only I had had, like, 3 tacos instead of 1 bite. If only I was with a different group of people. If only I had beer. If only I had this. If only this happened, then, you know the drill, fill in the blank. It wouldn't have happened this way, and I'd be like walking away unscathed, looking good and successfully drinking. I don't know. But that was just not my story. That's never how it went. But I'm a victim. I don't take accountability for any of my actions. If anything, that was Officer Maggie's fault, right? It was my parents' fault. It was my childhood's fault. If you understood what I went through, you would drink and feel like me, right? And so that mentality, yeah, that was like fuel for alcoholism, right? And a fourth step later on, but fuel for alcoholism. And over the next few years, my world got smaller and smaller. I could get the job because I'm like a bullshitter. I used to stand up at the podium and say, I'm like a really personal person. Well, I mean, I am, but like, I'm really personal. I can get the job. No, I bullshit people. I will show up. I've got the look good. I will show you what a good employee I am. They'll give me the job. They'll give me the keys. Within a day, within a week, within a month, within 6 months, I will lose that job. I will put all your customers, all your employees at risk. I will leave to go get drunk during work and not come back. I will say shit like, I have to use the bathroom because I have a UTI just so I can go into the bathroom and drink. Like, who the fuck does that, right? Like, I'm back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. A couple years before I got sober, I applied for a job at Jiffy Lube, and I swear to God, to this day, I thought it was for a receptionist. I'm like, I can do that shit. And so I went in for the interview. I got the job on the spot. See you on Monday. Perfect. I get there for my first day of work, and they give me the suit and the boots. I'm like, where's the phone? Where's the desk? Where's the notepad? No, like, I am in full Jiffy Lube gear. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't even know what my job is. Maybe I, like, worked on cars. I literally have no idea. But the most important thing about Jiffy Lube was that I met the love of my life day one. Day one, it was real, you guys. He was a lower bay tech. And more importantly, he was 21. Jeff. Right? Like, I'm 19 years old. The prerequisite for dating me is, how old are you, 21? And do you think I'm the shit? Yeah, cool. And I had high standards. I know today that I'm really lucky to be alive. Right? The depths that my alcoholism took me were to the depths of hell. And I also hated myself. I didn't deserve anything good in my life. I was in a relationship with somebody who treated me like absolute dog shit. And I justified it because I hated myself and I loved to drink. And if this is what I have to do in order to make this magic equation work, sign me up. So day after day after day, I ended up getting like some faux restraining order one day. And at this time, I'm 20 years old, and my parents, they don't trust me, no shit. But they're also terrified for my life. And these two people, they work full time. They're really hard workers and they care so deeply for their children. They had to babysit me, right? Like, I'm passed out in my childhood bedroom. My parents would, first half of the day, mom would be on shift. Second half of the day, dad would be on shift. And they just do that day in and day out because they couldn't let me be by myself, right? And so I remember waking up at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon and my phone is vibrating. And there he is, right? Lower Bay Tech, the man that I've got this, you know, thing with. And, baby, I'm so sorry. I love you. I'll never do that again. I'll never do it again. And naturally, I said, okay, great. And within probably 30 minutes, I heard him, you know, honking outside, and there he was to pick me up. And I remember walking up the first flight of stairs at my parents' house, and there was my mom at the top of the stairs, and she's looking down at me. And she says, please don't go. Please don't go. You know, and I just flipped her off, and I walked out. And I'm really, really lucky to be alive tonight. Really lucky to be alive tonight. He went to jail that night for attempted murder. And the next day I went to rehab. You guys, I needed a vacation so badly. alcoholism is really exhausting. It's really exhausting. I mean, I didn't have it, but like, it was really, really exhausting. And so I went to rehab, you know, and I was there for 3 out of the 4 months because I got kicked out. And because I don't follow the rules. I'm not there to stop drinking. You know, I'm drinking mouthwash. I'm drinking. I'm not doing anything, right? I'm on a break. I meet the next man of my dreams, right? So like, I'm not taking anything seriously. I've got this. I'm not drinking, except I kind of am. I'm not drinking. I got this. And me and my new boo get kicked out of rehab, and now we're gonna stay sober together. I love the newcomer couple that comes into AA, and they're like, "We're gonna do this together." I'm like, "Yes, I know you. I see you. I love you. Keep coming back." Because we were gonna do it together, and I swear to God, we meant it with every fiber in our being, right? And you know how the story plays out. I have an idea that, like, we haven't drank in like a month. AA is really fun, but like, we're not drinking. Like, I don't really want to drink that much. He doesn't either. His problem was heroin. So we just like started drinking together, right? And then my heroin using boyfriend left me within probably a week or two because he could not stand to be around me, right? There he goes, and there I am. And I'd been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous because of the DUIs and the drunken publics and the trespassings and all the things. So I've got that. I've gone to your meetings. I get it. You guys are happy, joyous, free. That's good for you. It's cute. I don't need it. I'm 18. I'm 19. I'm 20, for God's sakes. Like, I don't look like you. I don't sound like you. I don't anything like you. I've got alcoholism. And it's the very thing that wants to keep me at a minimum 20 miles from the truth. You guys are sharing about recovery. You're sharing about the disease of alcoholism. And I'm over here in my head just like, sign the card and leave. Right? It wants to pick apart everything that you say and everything that you do so that I don't have to relate, so that I can go on with my merry way and continue on to fuck shit up. And so what happened for me is I'm going to meetings, because what happens with alcoholism, because it's such a progressive disease, that got to the point for me that even when I wanted to stop drinking, it got to that point. I wanted to stop drinking, and I couldn't stop. I didn't have a vote in the matter. I would set about the day with the intentions of, okay, today's the day. I can't drink. I don't want to drink. And I can't even stay sober long enough to get to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't sit in a meeting longer than 5 minutes to leave out the back door, to go to the liquor store around the corner, to buy booze, chug it in the bathroom, just to sit back down in that meeting for the next hour. And that's the disease of alcoholism. To be clean, sober, and happy about it on Saturday night at 9:15 is a gift. Is an absolute gift. And so what happened for me is I thought I had burned all the bridges in AA, like, that's even possible, but I burned all the bridges in AA. I'm showing up to your meetings drunk. I'm taking advantage of you. You're giving me rides. You're being nice. You're this, you're that. And I am riddled with so much fear and so much shame that I can't even come back to meetings anymore, because you know who I am. And I can't even on a deep, deep level admit who I am. I know, but I can't say it. I can't admit it. And so I find my way back, or not back, but I find my way in Orange County in sober living, because I can't get sober here. For the love of God, I can't get sober here. And so my parents get me into sober living, and I'm there for 3 weeks. I got there in February of 2008, and within 3 weeks, I'm thinking to myself, the plan, really, if I'm being honest, was to win my ex-boyfriend back, who was getting his two-year chip at what is now the Frederick speaker meeting, at the time was the Sierra Vista speaker meeting on Friday nights. I'm going to win him back. Now, mind you, a month and a half before at the New Year's Eve event at the Odd Fellows Hall in Morro Bay, my last memory there is being passed out on the curb outside of the Odd Fellows Hall, looking up, and there is him. And at the time, I think his daughter was six. And they're standing above me with that look on their faces of just disgust and disappointment. Like, holy shit, how did you do this? Right? That look was so familiar. Right? So I can say that this guy wanted nothing to do with me a month and a half later, but I'm going to go win him back. I've got 3 weeks of sobriety. Actually, I don't, but I can't. I'm not telling anybody. So I get on the train. I tell my parents that, you know, we're going to have a sober weekend, and I'm coming up on the train back to San Luis Obispo, where, you know, where I'm from. And and the plan, I'm finally 21, by the way. I had just turned 21 the month before. So the plan is just to have a beer. One beer. And here's alcoholism to a T. One beer led to two led to three led to Bloody Marys. Now I'm drinking with everybody around me on the train. The conductor's buying me alcohol, right? Same dance, different day. Pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. I heard it put in early sobriety. The man takes the drink takes the drink, and then the drink takes the man. There it was. And there's alcoholism, right? Even if I wanted to just have a beer, I couldn't. That phenomenon of craving, which I've come to understand in Alcoholics Anonymous, there it was. So we pulled into the train station in San Luis Obispo, and I'm in a blackout. I am in a blackout, and all I remember is just stumbling off the train, right? And looking up, and I was just struck sober for just a second. And I look up, and there were my parents, right? And the look on their faces of, oh my God, what are we going to do with you? Right? That look, it just penetrated me in a way that nothing had before. Because I knew in that moment exactly who I was and what I needed to do. And back into the blackout I went. And I came to that next morning on February 23rd of 2008. And the need to drink was gone. And I have not had a drink since. Now, I can't tell you that my sobriety from February 23rd of 2008 to now, just like that I've been rocketed into a fourth dimension for the last almost 16 years. Like, I didn't want to drink that Saturday morning, but I didn't know that if you didn't want to drink that you actually had to do the shit on the wall, right? Like, I looked at that as like wall decor, you know? Who comes to AA, doesn't want to drink and does shit? Like, that just was not going to be part of my equation. It's because I didn't understand alcoholism yet. I had spent the last 6 to 7 years drinking myself to death, understanding pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization on a soul level, ruining my life and everybody else's that came even close to me. And then I come into Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't do a damn thing, right? Come into a 12-step program and don't work the 12 steps. The irony is astonishing. But I don't understand that I have alcoholism. I understand that I have a drinking problem and it caused a lot of wreckage, and so I'm going to come here and I'm going to hang out with you guys, and we're like going to do like the fellowship. Yay, fellowship. We're going to go to meetings. We're going to like sit on old men's laps. We're going to just like wear mini skirts, and we're not going to change anything. I'm just going to be the sober drunk girl. The drunk sober girl. I don't know. I'm just going to be the girl that doesn't drink anymore, and self will run riot is going to be the name of the game. I don't understand what I'm doing. And it doesn't matter. I just think this is sobriety, right? At about 6 months of sobriety, going to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, not asking for help, or asking for help and not following through, was about to kill me. It was about to kill me. And I didn't know that it was untreated alcoholism, but it was untreated alcoholism. And I woke up on a Thursday morning at about 6 months of sobriety in so much pain, we stood at the turning point. I was either going to go right or I was going to go left. Like, I am a gal that goes left 100% of the time. You tell me to go right, I'll go left. I've been told that going right's the better way. I'm going to go left, right? And on that morning, I did something that I had never, ever done before. And that was to hit my knees and pray. And I said, God, please help me. I can't do this anymore. And what was to follow was the simple act of calling somebody. It sounds so simple. And this thing is like 1,000 pounds. But out of sheer desperation and being at that turning point, I picked up the phone and called somebody that I didn't even know who she was. And I asked for help. And the difference was, because I know how to ask for help. Anthony, help me. Like, I need you. Hey, you over there, get me out of trouble. Hey, put the fire on my ass out so I can like go back to like reigniting it, right? With no semblance of gratitude whatsoever, I use and abuse people. That's what I do. I called this woman and I asked for help. And she said, let's meet for coffee. And I showed up. I took the third step and I didn't even know it, right? I made a decision to start doing things differently. And I can tell you that the doors of freedom into a new way of existing, a way where I don't have to run the show, Or I don't have to leave my fingerprints all over everything. Or I don't have to make it all about me 100% of the time. Or I don't have to suck you dry. Or I don't have to set you up to fail. Or I don't have to expect. I have been given a life so different because, normally it's right here, because of the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because of the steps, I've been freed from the bondage of self, both drunk and sober. I understand today that I have alcoholism cursing through my veins. Sober. I'm just as alcoholic today as I was when I was drunk in the Odd Fellows Hall trying to keep my shit together. I'm just as alcoholic today. The difference is, A, I've been given a gift. I've been given a gift. I don't want to drink today. I don't need to drink today. I don't have that desire, right? I've been given a life and a design for living that really sets me up for a different way of existing. And I walk elbow in elbow with a power greater than myself that I have never, ever had to question. Well, that's not accurate. I've never had to question his existence, whether I trust, whether I show up, whatever. I have a power greater than myself that I can lean into 5,000% no matter what. I used to be so self-reliant. And let me tell you, self-reliance fails me. It failed me before. It will fail me again. So left to my own devices, not only will I fuck up my life sober, but I will work my way closer to a drink sober, right? And so I'm going to end with this. I was about 6 years. Van, it's just about to get good, though. Van, it's just about to get good. Oh, my God. Van, don't leave. Justin, it was just about to. This is like where everything changes. You guys, I'm going to talk for another hour. Come back. Rude. No, I'm just kidding. I was 7 years sober, and my phone rang. I knew who it was. I knew what it was going to be. I knew. And it's probably 8:30, 9 o'clock at night. I know what the phone call is going to be. I know what it's going to sound like. And the phone call always devastated me. It always broke my heart. It was my brother. I knew if I picked up the phone, he was going to tell me about how amazing his life is and the manuscript that he's writing and all the things that he's doing. And he's going to be doing it from a shitty little apartment in Grover Beach with a cigarette in hand and a beer in the other. Just telling me the fake bullshit of what it means to live a life of an alcoholic. And I couldn't do it. I didn't want to do it. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me to suit up and show up no matter what I think it's going to be like. No matter what. God's in charge here. And I am responsible. I love that responsibility prayer. I am responsible, right? So I answered the phone, and there was my brother on the other end of the phone, and he was hitting his bottom, and he was sobbing. I've never heard somebody cry like that in my life. This man was sobbing. And I did what I've been taught here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I answered the phone, and I gave him the number of a man in AA, right? Because I am responsible. And I didn't know that he was going to call that guy. I didn't know that he was going to go to his first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous the next day. And I didn't know that over 10 years later, he'd be sober and living a life beyond his wildest dreams. Right? When Paula runs the show, when Paula gets in her own way, I will miss out on the magic. I will miss out on the magic. But if I trust in my higher power and I'm leaning into the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, if I'm leaning into that third step and sitting in the back seat with my seatbelt on and letting God run the show because he, quite frankly, is a much better driver than me, then I can be present and watch everything unfold. I don't have to like it. I don't have to agree with it. I don't have to anything. I just have to accept it, right? I just have to accept it. And that is one of the many gifts of recovery that I have gotten as a clean and sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a grateful member of AA. I don't have enough time to share about the grand amazement that is my life today. Most importantly, it's from the inside out. I wake up every day and I don't want to die. I wake up every day and I have such deep self-acceptance. I show up for my life, for my family, for my friends, for my sponsees, for my all the people that I am so privileged to be a part of their lives with service and love and gratitude in my heart. I'm absolutely obsessed with my life today. And I will tell you, because I have alcoholism, I also understand that I could have missed out on all of this. And because I'm alcoholic, I can still miss out on what's to come if I don't continue to make this the most significant event in my life. Thank you. I love you.
Please give Paula another round of applause. Wow, great job.